Hello, and welcome to the So What podcast, in which political economic analyst JP Lantman discusses the issues uppermost in the minds of South Africans. You can find a written version of this content on JP's website, jplantman.co.za. I am Ruda Lantman, and I am your host. This conversation accompanies JP's newsletter dated 19 September 2024, entitled So Far, So Good. JP, you're focusing on the GNU, the Government of National Unity. It's now 2.5 months. Is it going to last?
Certainly looks like it so far, and I say that because the first red line for the Government of National Unity was the so-called Bella Act, Basic Education Law Amendments Act. The DA, as well as the Freedom Front Plus, made it clear before they joined the Government of National Unity that this is a red line for them, that if the President signs the bill, then they will leave. Ellen Ziller was very vociferous about that, but also John Steenhuisen. Well, the President did sign it, and nobody left. The President did play a clever card. He delayed the bringing into operation of clauses 4 and 5 of the bill, which are the two contentious clauses. And he said he would delay that for 3 months to enable a political process, political discussions between various parties and stakeholders to try and resolve the issue. That was a good move, and we must now see what happens in the next 3 months. But let's just play out the scenarios. If a political compromise is reached, then, well, then great, then the problem is resolved. If it is not reached, then the matter will go to the Constitutional Court. I think that's a fairly certain assumption. And if the court says these clauses are not valid, well, of course, then they won't come into force and effect, and the matter is settled. If the Constitutional Court says, no, all this is fine, there's no constitutional problem with it, well, then that's the story. And the parties who have committed themselves to the Constitution cannot then walk away, because the Constitutional Court gave a ruling that they don't like. So I think we're over that red line. The second red line, of course, is NHI, but the President has already made it abundantly clear on several occasions that he wants to see talks and negotiations around that. So I would expect in the next year or two significant political movement around this, around NHI, and that will probably remove that from the red line list as well.
I see that there are some commentators who say that this process with the President signing a bill, or which then becomes an act,
yeah,
but holding back on some elements of it, that it clouds the legislative process.
Well, yes and no, but it enhances the legislative process in the sense that you deal with critical problem areas. Take, for example, the Electricity Regulations Amendment Bill, which the President signed earlier. There he also suspended the clause because the Local Government Association has indicated that they will take that particular clause on review to the Constitutional Court. And the President said, well, okay, then let's not enact it. Let's hold back and see if we can find a compromise. I think that is the intelligent and wise way of dealing with it. What's the purpose of ramrodding something through and signing it if people are in any case going to take it to court and you've got a whole aggressive contestation around it? I think it's better to try and find a political solution.
Both the DA and the ANC have cut people loose. How did that happen and why?
Well, the DA, as you know, cut loose two people. The one was John Steenhuisen's chief of staff, which he appointed, and then very shortly thereafter asked him to resign, as well as a member of parliament that has been highlighted that he's made a range of offensive remarks over a long time, long period. And he was expelled from the party. He lost his membership, and therefore he also lost his parliamentary seat. And I think what we see in that case is, you know, it's okay to have strong views and articulate them strongly and so on and so forth, but they're not really in line, in tandem with the spirit of a government of national unity. And so the DA judged it wisely to cut them loose. I think that tells you something about the impact that the process is having. On the other side, we saw that CG Kotwa, who resigned as a member of the government because he was charged, then surprisingly came back as a member of parliament, and now he's resigned from that as well. And I think once again what we're seeing is the ANC is realizing if you are seen kowtowing to people with a record and people that are charged, you're going to pay an electoral price. So they cut that loose, seem loose as well. And I think what it indicates is people appreciate that the body politic has changed. You cannot just do what you want and stick to your position and damn the rest. You've got to behave in a way which reinforces the middle.
There are also other parties in the GNU, apart from the ANC and the DA, and some of them have, or had, before the elections, even more radical positions. Our new Minister of Land Affairs comes from the PAC. How's that playing out?
It's playing out very well, and you're quite right. The PAC is well known for their stand on land matters. For them, it's a kind of a red line. I'm using the description. It's not what they said. But restoring land to the previously dispossessed is a very, very important part of the PAC tradition and philosophy. Now, the leader of that party is the Minister of Land Affairs, so one could expect fireworks, so to speak. And what he said was, he made an early speech early in his tenure, and he said that at some stage the country must have an adult conversation around expropriation. And then he moved on and he said, in the meantime, there is low-hanging fruit that can be harvested. And what is the low-hanging fruit that he had in mind? He highlighted two. The first one is dishing out title deeds to beneficiaries, people who get land and people who get houses, give them title deeds so that there's no question about their legal ownership. And secondly, he said that the government has got to speed up the process of land restitution, where people have put in claims and those claims have not been resolved yet. Now, land restitution is, of course, a program which is particularly, specifically mandated by the Constitution, so it must be done anyway. And I think it's two very sensible proposals, or two very sensible low-hanging fruits, so to speak. So there again, you can see that it's not about slogans, it's about solutions. And I think for that, one must commend him. And he probably wouldn't have taken that position if he wasn't in the government.
It seems to me that this also gives us a kind of answer to something that people said before, which is, oh, this party is going to get that position, so they will now put into practice their specific policies. Now we see that doesn't happen. They have to work as a unit.
You can only put in place or push forward the policies of the government of national unity, not of your party. If your party is, for example, in favor of the death penalty, well, that's an easy one. It's against the Constitution, so that's easy. But even politically, the majority of parties in the GNU doesn't want the death penalty. So you can't, get on your high horse and start punting it. You've got to take the line of the government of national unity. And by definition, that is a kind of a moderate in the middle line. Yeah, you're quite right. Parties cannot pursue their own positions. They have to pursue their own positions within the framework of the bigger government of national unity.
What do you think motivates a party to stay in the GNU even when there's tension and disagreement?
Well, if you're inside the tent, then you can help to move things along. You can help to change things, maybe even only in theory and only on the margin, but at least you can do that. So it's much nicer to be in the scrum and to push forward and try and capture the ball than what it is to just stand on the sidelines and shout. I think that's number one. Number two, the parties gain visibility when you are a minister or a deputy minister of something and you move around and the media tracks you and so on. It's visibility not just for you, but also for your party. And thirdly, there's the perks, the benefits. So people are not going to move away or walk away voluntarily from the perks, from the visibility, and from that feeling of being part of the scrum. They will stay.
All of this sounds like good news, but Gauteng, picture there is a bit different.
Absolutely. Gauteng is the outlier. It's the one place where the idea of a government, a real government of national unity, has not taken place yet. We see that in the provincial government, but we also see it in the Joburg, Johannesburg and Tshwane metros. And that's a great disappointment. It's also a great missed opportunity. I think both the provincial government and the metro governments will be much stronger if you can involve the biggest and second and third biggest parties in the government, rely on their expertise and ability and work together to improve conditions. So, Ruda, we'll have to see to what extent the ANC will pay a price for this approach, because they're the one driving it. The local government elections of 2026 is only about 26 months away. It's not a long time. And if Gauteng, and particularly Johannesburg and Tshwane, do not improve substantially over the next 26 months, if service delivery and the quality of administration and so on does not improve substantially, I think the ANC will pay an electoral price. But Gauteng is certainly the outlier to the national picture.
You say the ANC, but in Tshwane, it's Action SA, which is making the trouble.
Yeah, quite right. And I think they will probably pay a price. I think Action SA did much worse than what they thought they would in the election, so they are already weaker. Maybe this is a kind of a desperate play from them. I don't know. But I can't imagine that that's the kind of thing that the people who voted for Action SA want them to do. So, yes, I think they will also pay a price.
They're not part of the GNU, are they?
No, they're not. He's been very vociferous. Herman Mashaba has been very vociferous that he will not work with the ANC, and now he's working with the ANC in Tshwane. So much for promises.
What can derail the GNU?
Well, if we look back at our own history and the experience of the government of national unity that we had after 1994 for 2 years, it is quite clear that the biggest danger, the biggest risk is inside the political parties itself, in the sense that those people in the political party who is not in the executive, who is not a minister or a deputy minister, start attacking their colleagues who are in the executive and say, why didn't you do this? Why did you agree to that? Why did you support that? You know, you can hear the accusatory tone coming through. And that played a role in the collapse of the government of national unity after 94. People that in that government told me that. So I think that is the big danger here, that people in the ANC are saying to the ANC leaders, guys, what are you doing here? You are going too far. And people in the DA will say, guys, what are you doing here? You're going too far. So you've got to keep your own people not under control, but you have to bring your own people along. I think that's the important point. And that's where the internal party managers, like Fikile Mbalula in the ANC and Helen Zille in the DA, where they play a very, very important role. It is their responsibility not just to look after their party, which is, of course, what they must do, but they must also help and carry the government of national unity. Those internal party managers have got a very important job. And let's see how they conduct themselves over the next year or two.
A major criticism of the GNU is that it means that we now have 10 more cabinet members than we had before, and that it's very costly.
Yes, that is the criticism. We have two more cabinet ministers. We used to have 28, they're now 30. We have 8 more deputy ministers. They used to be 35, they're now 43. So you've got a total of 10 more. And so, yes, on the first sound, it sounds as if that's very expensive on the first hearing. But let's just look at the picture from the other side. What did we get in return for the 10? Well, we got 21 people who were not from the ANC now in the executive. We got 12 people from the DA who is now in the executive in exchange for the 10, if you want to look at it that way. We also have 4 people from the IFP now in the executive. And then you have people from a range of other parties like GUD, Al-Jamaa and so on, who are now serving in the executive. So now you have to ask yourself a simple question. These new people that have come in with new energy, with diversity, with a different perspective on life and so on, are they making the government stronger or weaker? I think they make the government stronger. They bring new ideas. They bring different approaches. Am I happy to pay for that with 10 extra cabinet ministers? I'm certainly very happy to do that. I would much rather have a bigger cabinet that is more diverse and have more newcomers than just the same old that we used to have.
What will be the real test of this government? When we look back in 5 years' time, how will we judge it?
I think the most important test would be what the government has achieved, looking back, what it has achieved in bringing down poverty, unemployment, and inequality. Those three things, poverty, unemployment, and inequality, are by far the biggest problems in South Africa. And you're not going to solve other problems if you don't solve those problems. So the government of national unity will be, in my view, will be judged by that. Now, is that possible? Well, as you know, we are now in the 11th year. 2024 is the 11th year. So we've had more than a decade where the population grew faster than the economy. The economy grew at about 1 and a bit percent. The population is growing at 1.5, 1.6%. So you're going backwards all the time. You're creating new jobs. At the end of 2023, we had as many jobs as we had before COVID struck in 2020. So that's something to celebrate. But what happened in 2020, 21, 22, 23? Well, 3 to 4 million new people entered the labor market. So your unemployment goes up. You've got the same number of jobs, but the unemployment goes up. So you have to grow the economy faster than the population. It's a simple matter of mathematics or accounting. And there's your test. The government of national unity will have to get our economic growth rate to at least 3-3.5%, double the rate of population growth. Then we can get somewhere. Now, the good news is that the Bureau for Economic Research at Stellenbosch has done the work, and they've published their findings. And basically, they're saying if the changes or the reform under Project Vulindlela are implemented in energy, in harbors, in railways, in water, and so on, then we can achieve over the next 2 to 3 years 3.5% growth. That view of 3.5% growth has since been confirmed by the governor of the bank, of the Reserve Bank, and also by the Deputy Minister of Finance. By the way, the Deputy Minister of Finance, who is a very committed Vulindlela supporter, is also a leader of the SACP. And there you have again one of those wonderful paradoxes that you find only in South Africa. So I think it's quite possible. The manufacturing survey was released by the BER, and what they found was that politics as a constraint on manufacturing is now at the lowest level that it has been since 2012. That's a significant development. And what you also see with that is a sharp increase in manufacturing investment. We're talking manufacturing sector specifically now. Now that is without doubt good news. And then yesterday, the consumer confidence index was released, and that has also improved from what it was. Not as dramatically as manufacturing, but it has improved. So the bottom line is, I think the government of national unity is, there's a confidence dividend coming out of it, and that dividend is already spurring investment and hopefully will also spur consumers to take a slightly more optimistic note. And that bodes well for economic growth. So I think it is achievable, but that will be the test. Can they get economic growth to a level substantially more than population growth and do something for poverty, unemployment, and inequality?
And that depends on the structural reforms contained in the Vulindlela program.
Yeah, it is both simple and complicated. Simple in the sense that we don't have to do 55 things. Simple in the sense that we don't have to go to the IMF or the World Bank. There's a homegrown solution right here. But those reforms are, of course, not easy. Reforming railways and reforming harbors is not an easy process. And completing the reforms in energy is also complicated. So in that sense, it's complicated. But you know what you want to do. You know what you have to do. It's only the execution that is complicated. So I think it's very doable.
In summary, so what?
Well, I think the first so what is that the government of national unity has survived its first red line. You may recall, if you go back over news headlines of the last 3 months, that when the government was formed, they said, okay, right, the government is now formed, but what about these two red lines, Bella and NHI? Well, we've now passed Bella, and on NHI, the tone is already changing. So this expectation stroke fear that the government of national unity will just collapse simply has not materialized. And I think that bodes well for the stability of the government. I think, secondly, All the parties who are now currently in the government of national unity are operating in the middle. They're not operating on the fringes. They don't bring their parties' ideological positions unless those ideological positions are in line with the government of national unity. So the government is playing in the middle of the field, not on the left and not on the right. And that, I think, is a very strong plus for the country. And we see that in the improved confidence measures that I've referred to. And I think the last so what is that this government of national unity is really presenting the best chance for South Africa to break out of the stagnation of the last decade. Basically, from the time of the World Cup, we've been treading water for a decade and a half. And I think this brings the real opportunity of changing that into a much more dynamic situation.
Thank you for listening to the So What podcast. If you enjoy this content, please don't forget to leave a review and a rating, and please consider subscribing so you don't miss any future episodes. Also, tell your friends. Remember, you can find a written version of all JP's content at jplandman.co.za.